Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 224, recorded on September 12th, 2014. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I'm Michael Johnston, and I accidentally hit FN twice, and now my computer is dictating everything I'm saying right now.
Awesome. Hey, is it dictating what we're saying right now?
No, just me.
Now I'm wondering if this would be a good way to get a transcript.
Wow, yeah, it's working really well, actually. That's pretty fun.
Huh,
interesting. So, Dave Hamilton is here from the Mac Geek Gab and the Mac Observer. Hey, Dave, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We got you here because you were physically in contact with the mystical devices that we're about to talk about.
I was, yes.
And Jeff Gamet is also here from the Mac Observer. Hey, Jeff, how are you doing?
I'm doing really well, and especially because I now have caffeine in me, and that's like a critical component for today.
Yeah, I think for everybody, most of the world, it seems. And Adam Christensen is also here from the MacCast. Hey, Adam.
And I just got back from lunch, so I'm sleepy since I got very little sleep last night.
Oh, yeah. So it's really strange. I wonder why we're all tired today. Maybe it's because of here. I want to read this. I like the headline here on TMO, which is Apple's iPhone 6 pre-order upgrading massive fail. Twitter freaks out.
Pretty much.
Yep. There you go.
That was one of our that article within an hour of Brian posting it live was one of our most read articles of the week.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I can imagine so. Oddly enough, I guess it's not that odd. It's a pretty significant release, but it seemed like everybody
stuff we post at 3 a.m. doesn't do all that well.
Yeah, but everybody was up.
Drives traffic.
Yeah.
That's right there. That's the secondary headline. That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, it certainly makes sense when I posted a jokey tweet about what was going on last night. And then 3 seconds later, my phone just exploded with retweets and favorites.
You know, that was the worst thing because I'm on my phone trying to freaking order the phone, right?
It's just
and
going
every
nuts.
Tweet is coming down and covering the controls that I need to press every time I need to press something.
Well, you can push them out,
launching into Sweetbot and jumping back.
That's where do not disturb mode comes in.
I know that would have been smart, but
well,
you're in the heat of the moment and you make dumb decisions, as you'll hear. I made a few last night.
It actually didn't. That doesn't work if you have your phone unlocked, though. You'll still get those notifications come down.
Oh, that's
yeah. But I mean, if you turn on if I just had flipped on do not disturb, then those would not happen.
No, I'm saying with do not disturb, those still come down.
Oh, the little notification things do come down. You just don't get the sound. Right.
Yeah, I think so. So, the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus that we will talk about in detail in a minute is available. It went on sale at 12 something midnight.
yeah, not even close.
It's so cute how you said that, Mike.
I went to bed because
you were the smart one.
I was a sleepy boy at some point. When it got to be about 12:45, I just threw in the towel and went to bed.
Now we're talking about 12:45 Pacific.
Pacific, yes.
Oh, you're on that's right. You're on the West Coast now.
Yep.
Anyway,
yeah. So it wasn't as big a deal for you East Coasters.
In that it was the middle of the night when we started. Like you had the false assumption that you would just like stay up until 12:30, maybe like you usually do.
Yeah, totally.
And then just go to sleep and it was no big deal.
Yeah.
Whereas us East Coasters, I mean, I slept for a couple hours and then got up at 2:45. So for me it was up in the middle of the night anyway, and then when I finally got my order in at 4:45.
Okay.
You know. Yeah. It was all fun. That was good.
Yeah. And even though I'm in Colorado, I live on East Coast time. So Dave's schedule is exactly how mine played out.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I ended up not going to bed.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
So you're just being powered by fumes at this point.
Yeah.
So the first thing that's relevant to me in this whole thing was, and we talked about it last time, was that so T-Mobile doesn't do the contract thing, and I was planning to get a T-Mobile device this time around, switch from AT&T, and I was really hoping that Apple would finally figure out some way to offer it from their website without charging full price for the phone. But unfortunately, they did not have that option. So I was planning to order from T-Mobile, which I can only assume started selling the phones at the same time Apple did, which I
and
guess...
you would be wrong.
Okay, when did they start selling them?
It was probably... I have to kind of guess on the exact time. I'm going to say around 9 a.m. East Coast time.
Oh, so that's not too bad. That's probably right around the time that I woke up from a crazy dream where I was thinking about how I hadn't ordered my phone yet.
Right. And you were having the same dream as so many T-Mobile customers.
Why does that feel so much like T-Mobile? Like, oh, everybody else doing it at midnight. We'll just
do it whenever the hell we want to do it.
And start selling them.
That's fine. Well,
it also meant that no one could buy an unlocked iPhone. So you had to wait until the T-Mobile phones were available before you had an unlocked option.
From Apple, too? So if you're buying it from Apple.com?
Because right. Apple has to communicate with their servers.
Oh. Well, that sounds weird, but okay. I'm sure you guys looked right. into that.
Well, I'm assuming. Jeff can correct me. Is that why, Jeff?
That's my assumption.
Huh. Yeah, I just assumed that T-Mobile's website would pop online as soon as Apple's did. I just kind of assumed that there was...
Apple's would have to, say, hey, Michael just bought a T-Mobile phone and wants to activate service over on T-Mobile.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Yeah.
They have to be aware of you as a customer.
Right.
So the part I totally love about that whole thing is that when I checked the T-Mobile website at early o'clock this morning,
okay,
they had a form you could fill out right. so that you could get an email when they start pre-orders.
Yep.
So it's like, all right, yeah, because I want to know.
Mm-hmm. And I did that too.
I still haven't gotten the email.
I did, but that's pretty funny.
Apple sent out their email this morning.
Yeah, that was
funny. I noticed
long after it slipped.
You can order get your iPhone now. It's like no, not really.
It's like 3 to 4 weeks now, right? Is if you pre-order. That's a big bummer.
Well, for the Plus now, this morning all of the iPhone 6 were still available for launch day. I think.
Yeah, but nobody's getting those.
Right.
So. Adam, you got yours through the Apple Store app. That seemed to work somehow before the website worked, right?
It took me a long time to figure out that. So, yeah, when you went into the App Store app, you kind of had two paths. And the topmost path was, the big banner ad that says click to buy your phone, and then you click buy now. And then you would pick your model and all that sort of stuff. And they were having some serious server lag with that. So you'd go to pick the model, and it was all like Ajax, sort of stuff. So you'd hit the model and then it would activate the next set of buttons, and it would take forever and it would time out and it just wasn't working. And then even if you got past that and were lucky enough to get to then the carrier check. So the last thing in there is, okay, which carrier are you going with?
Right.
You would tap that and then it would ask you for your information for eligibility if you could get to that screen. So I was trying to get through that like a million times, once that came online, which was like 30, 40 minutes late. And then I realized there was another path, which was the first path I tried when I first opened the app, but it didn't work at all, which was check your eligibility first, and then it was a quicker process for sort of picking all of your options. So I finally went back to that, and that's what ultimately worked for me. But the bummer was that when it did work, so I have two phones on my account, and I have my 5S, which is the one I just upgraded last year.
Yep.
And I have a 5, which I purchased on September 15th or 14th. September 14th, 2012.
Oh, man.
That's when those were purchased. That's right. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
So that was the one that was eligible for upgrade pricing.
Okay.
That was the number that I plugged in to the eligibility thing, and it came back, and I thought it was odd because it came back and said, well, your price for a 128 iPhone 6 Plus in space gray is $749.
Yikes.
And I went, oh, that's not right. You know, that's not, something's messed up.
Sure, yeah.
And so I had to make a split, you know, a moment a panicked decision. Right there. Like, do I bail out? I just got in here. I just got through all of these checks that I've been trying to do for the past hour and 15 minutes or whatever it was at that point. Do I bail out and go figure out why that number's not right? Or do I plow forward, make sure I get my order in, get my reservation in place, and then deal with it after the fact? And unfortunately, I chose for the latter, thinking that this won't be a big deal. All I have to do is call up Apple in the morning, explain the situation, say, look, I should have upgrade pricing. Here's the real number. Turns out, no.
Yeah.
Like, once you accept all that, it's locked in stone because you accept the contract agreement.
Oh boy.
And then you're done.
That's now, it. Technically, because it's AT&T, you have, I forget if it's 14 or 30 days, but you've got, you're right, you can bail out, but then you have to go back to the beginning of the line.
Right.
Exactly.
But what if you walked into your AT&T store, right, and told them, hey, I've been a customer for a long time. Here's what I want to do. This phone that I have in my hand, I want to return to you, and then I want you to sell it back to me on this other line.
Yeah, that's what I
tried
thinking.
That. I called them up. I also called up Apple. I first called up Apple, and they're like, you're going to have to call AT&T.
Sure.
And I'm like, but the order's with you, and you're taking the money, so, you know, there's this weird money thing going on, and I have a feeling, you know, I don't know what the deal is, like who gets what money and how it goes where, and, you know. Yeah, I'm totally with you. You would think it would be like that, and I may attempt that as well. But I even on the phone, you know, when I had them on there, I said, could you just put a credit on my bill? Like, just, you know, like credit difference.
Yeah.
And that's fine by me too. And they were like, no, you're more than welcome to cancel your order and place a new one.
I would imagine that you could probably go into the Apple store and do that, and do the return, and then sell back.
I'm going to take my $250 penalty and just move on with my life.
Yeah, well, there's that too, right?
Yeah. At some point, the money, it becomes too expensive to train.
Because there were some things I did wrong. Because I knew my plan and I knew those were my numbers, I made the thing that we're all not supposed to do. I assumed that was the thing, and I should have checked it. You know, there was easy ways to check it beforehand. I read all those articles that were out there, and I just was confident about it. So, you know, as messed up it is that they can't fix it, it's totally on me because I saw the price, I made a decision, and I plowed forward, and, you know, I should have checked ahead of time. So, you know, I don't fault them. You know, it's a bummer that they can't do something, but. And actually, the reality is Apple was the most helpful. So I escalated up, and Apple's actually going to kind of take care of me on the back end a little bit. So
Which
go Apple
nice.
Support.
Cool. Yeah.
So Adam, while you've been talking, I hopped over to the Apple website and looked at the store page for the iPhone 6. We are now at the point where if you want to have an iPhone 6 delivered to you on the 19th, you need to buy a space gray 64 gig model. That's pretty much all that's left.
Not bad. Oh, yeah. So here's the other thing I did. So then I still had my other phone, which was eligible for upgrade. I went on AT&T and figured I'll buy a space gray over there. And in my rush to try and do that, I didn't notice that I was on the wrong tab. So I have a 128 iPhone 6 at upgrade pricing reserved with AT&T. But I'm just going to go cancel that one at this point because I think I really want the 6 Plus.
Yikes.
Well, that's fun. So I did it through T-Mobile, and there's really no indication of whether I'll get it on the 19th or what. So
I don't think you will.
Why is that? Just because, are you thinking that any order from that originated with T-Mobile is probably not going to be shipped on the 19th, or?
Just my Jedi instincts. My guess is that you'll get it around October 1st.
Oh boy. If that happens, I'm seriously
going to
cancel.
For the 6 Plus, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. What does it say? You ordered it from Apple or you ordered it from T-Mobile?
From T-Mobile.
And what does it say when it's going to, like... Now, as for your delivery date,
doesn't say anything.
Yeah, you're getting it October 1st if you're lucky. I really think based on everything that I've seen, and granted, I'm in, you know, sleep deprived mode too. I slept about, I don't know, 2 hours, maybe a little more. Got up, did the thing, was up for much longer than I expected, and then slept another maybe three and a half hours. So you know, take that as your basis for anything I say here. But all the people that I saw that were getting through early and ordering the 6 Plus, and either with, you know, AT&T or Verizon or however they were doing it, they all were convinced that, oh yeah, great, I'm going to get mine on the 19th. I'm going to get it on the 19th. This morning, one by one, I started hearing back from all of them, oh crap, it looks like it's not going to ship until the 19th, and I'm going to get it on October 1st. Now, this is Apple. We have seen them change the ship dates and delivery dates and even delivery method, upgrading everybody from standard to, you know, priority overnight from Taipei shipping or whatever it is, right? All of this stuff can happen and has happened in the past, but I'm not convinced it's going to with the 6 Plus. I don't think there's very many of them ready to roll. I think any of them that are going to be available on launch day are pickup in the store.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if I'm going to, it's going to be a continuing adventure, at least for me, if not for a lot of other people. But so I'm probably going to do some more research, RE the T-Mobile stores, see if they're doing some kind of reservation, if it would be prudent for me to try and line up and do something like that, maybe cancel my order. We'll see. So
yeah,
we'll see what happens.
See, that's the other thing, is I could cancel everything and do the camp out thing at this point.
And that may be the best way to do it, because while doing it online, you're fighting a virtual line of everybody who's ordering online. Whereas if you do it, you know, in the physical realm, then you're just vying for your spot in a real line that's certainly going to be much shorter than.
And the camp out thing can be fun. My thing is, I've done it so many times now, it's kind of old hat, and my time's more valuable than that. So again, I think I eat the $250 penalty and use that time to be more productive in other areas.
So you think
now, did you do Next, Adam, or did you do a new contract?
I did the regular contract, and I am picking up. So mine does say available for pickup 9/19. So
okay, all right. Well, there
on
you
my
go.
My order receipt. Cool. So
I want to jump into other stuff that's happened over the past week. But before I do that, I want to mention that I got the T-Mobile test drive.
Yeah.
Because I've been an AT&T customer since 2007 on the original iPhone. So I still have the unlimited data package, and I don't pay that much. I pay about what I'm going to pay with T-Mobile. However, here in San Luis Obispo, it is quote-unquote 4G data, which is kind of crappy and doesn't work that well. On the other hand, T-Mobile out here, it seemed, based on their maps and everything, that there's LTE out here. So I thought, you know, it'd be great to switch to T-Mobile. They're going to give me tethering in my plan, and I don't have to worry about them screwing me around on a lot of stuff. So maybe I should switch to T-Mobile. And of course, I wanted to try the data network for myself. And the process for signing up for the test drive was kind of a pain in the butt initially, because I could just not get the thing to work. I don't know if it had just been rolled out when I tried to do it, but I think it was last week when I got the idea to do it, and it finally worked out for me Sunday, where the web page actually walked me through the process where I could sign up for the thing. And you can only do it online. And I think it's T-Mobile/test drive, all one word. And so it seems to be working now. But long story short, I got the thing in short order. I think I did it on Sunday and I got it on Wednesday. So they sent me a 5S, which is pretty cool because I have a 5. So I get to get a little taste for the S version before I jump up to my 6, which
cool.
is neat. So I got to try out the Touch ID sensor, and because I'm doing I'm on the 1Password beta. I get to enjoy that sweet, sweet satisfaction of using Touch ID with 1Password and nice. And having the browser extension and all of that. It's just excellent. So, but all around, data's awesome out here on T-Mobile, which is kind of surprising, but it's definitely better than AT&T. And so that just cemented my decision to switch to T-Mobile. And so I think that the test drive is definitely a good option if you're curious. The only thing is you have to take it to a full-blown T-Mobile store to return it. You can't send it back. You can't take it to one of the offshoots. So that means I'm driving down to Santa Barbara next week. But that's not bad.
There's worse places you have to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So,
call up your friends in IB. Tell them it's a party.
Yeah. I don't know what that means.
Yeah, go see the Sonos guys.
Oh, yeah, I could see the Sonos guys. Yeah, that'd be cool. Okay, yeah. So on the 9th, magical things happened. Dave was there. The iPhone 6, of course, which we've been talking about. The small and the big. There's only 4.7 and 5.5, as I'm sure everybody already knows. And we already know from all the rumors what it looks like, or by the time they announced it.
Sure.
It was nothing really unexpected. It has NFC, and it's giant. And there's no...
It's giant.
The smaller size is the 5, or the 5S, rather. Right. So if you want a smaller than the 4.7, because it's a 4.7 and 5.5, or if you want a smaller than a 4.7, you got to get the 5S. And there is no 3.5 inch anymore, right? Can't get that from Apple?
That's correct.
Okay.
8 gig 4C is the 4C. 5C.
5C.
Which phone is that?
5C.
That was a special edition one, Dave.
Is the freebie.
Yeah.
Cheap model.
Yeah. So it is, they have the Retina HD display now on there that looks to be pretty nice. It does have the protruding camera lens. Big bummer.
Are they taking
there.
Liberties with the term HD on the 6, do we think?
I can't imagine Apple would ever do something like that.
I guess like 720 is considered by some to be HD has always been that problem thing, like defining what is HD.
Yeah, well they bumped up the pixels per inch, right?
No,
they didn't.
Nope, it's 326 on the iPhone.
On the six. On the six.
On
plus
the six
is higher.
On the plus, it's way higher.
Yeah, yeah. It's 401.
But they're calling both of them HD, right?
Yeah, they are.
Yes, they are. Yep, they are.
That's what I'm saying. Are we being a little bit liberal with...
Well, it's 720p on the smaller one.
Yeah, 720p versus 1080p.
Right, and there's 1080p right.
That's
the big one.
That's what I'm saying. I've always had issue with calling...
Yeah.
You know, with the liberalness of HD. Because you can also get into the whole bitrate debate. And I mean, there's lots of aspects to
sure,
HD. So
sure.
I guess that boat sails so Apple gets to, you know, be on it.
Yeah.
Or so... Not. However that works.
It has the A8 chip and the M8 coprocessor, right? And we...
It's more than 7.
It certainly is. And we don't really have much more information about what those chips bring to the table other than...
A barometer.
Yep.
Okay, barometer.
And it sounds like the M8 will offer better accuracy for motion-based things like tracking your steps.
I got the feeling
it can tell you distance.
Yeah, yeah, and I got the feeling that it was, well, it's using the gyroscope, right, to tell you distance.
Yeah, it's estimated distance.
But it also was doing something to know the difference between walking and cycling and that sort of thing, right?
But not swimming.
Well,
no, you're not going to swim with your iPhone. No,
Adam might.
That's right. Yeah. Apple Care Plus first.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I know some people were kind of open because Samsung has a couple phones that are waterproof, right?
Yeah, we were thinking about that. That would have been quite excellent, and that brings up the other point, which is that there's no sapphire display cover.
Yeah, that's an interesting development too. I haven't had time.
That would
to-
be a That would be an expensive piece of glass, though. Holy
That's
cow.
True.
Well, yeah. But there's still those. There's a couple stories surfacing today, and I think late yesterday, saying that they were literally weeks away from being able to actually pull it off, but they just didn't get yields. I guess based in the trouble area being that curved part of the glass. I think is. I only skimmed those articles so far, so I haven't had time to dig in yet. I've got them flagged to do a deeper dive, but that's
I'm
one
sure
of the.
That curved edge, even though it's a subtle thing, was a huge undertaking to make work.
Yeah, and that you know they're just going to go. They just went ahead and they're going to repurpose the stuff that they did produce for the and use it for the watch.
Right.
But it's
ion strengthened glass.
Yes, ion strengthened, whatever that means.
I also have an article flagged on that to decipher exactly what that means. Is it so? Who do we know? Is that Gorilla Glass then? That's gone through another process. Are they still using Corning, or do they? Or is this some other supplier that supplies ion strengthened glass?
Now there's a theory that means that it's Gorilla Glass, the next the next rev of Gorilla Glass. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Again, I haven't all these things have just come to the surface in the last 48 hours or so.
Right.
So I guess a little longer. We heard ion strengthened on Tuesday, so it's a little longer than that at this point.
Yeah. But as far as the A8 chip goes, there's really no, we don't know what the megahertz are, which is not as big a deal as I really wanted to know what the RAM is on that thing. And we probably won't know for another week or two.
When I fix it, pulls it apart.
Fix it. Yeah. Gets it in Australia.
Oh yeah, I was gonna say I should go down the street to watch them do it, but they're probably gonna do it in Australia. Is that what the plan is?
They always do it because it's
yeah, that's typically what they do.
Okay.
12 hours earlier, right?
Right.
Yeah. So the other thing about it is that the sleep wake button has been moved to the side because it's bigger.
That makes a huge difference in holding the thing.
Yeah.
So it's not bad in one hand. It really isn't.
Yeah. So, okay. That's what we should talk about is your impressions, because you are the one who has played with this device and we have not
held it briefly.
That's right. Yeah. So the six, honestly, it's certainly bigger. It feels like a tall version of the iPhone 5S, right? It is wider, but not very much wider. It's more a taller thing, and very comfortable in the hand. And I like the metal back. It kind of feels like a very fine revision of the original iPhone, right?
Yeah,
with all
yeah.
that. Yeah, and that's a good to me. That's a really good thing. So the six is tall, but totally fits in your hand, fits in your pocket. I suppose people with small hands will use the reachability or want to use the reachability thing where you double tap the home button and it shifts the icons down into thumb reachable area.
Do you really think this is going to be just quick aside on that? Do you really think that's going to be a gesture that people are going to get comfortable with and sort of use a lot? Or is it just one of those things that, you'll kind of try it and decide, it's really just easy for me to use two hands or jigger the thing around in my one hand so that I can reach up there.
I mean, I was intentionally using it while I played with it, and it was a very comfortable, natural thing to do.
I have a hard time sort of, with the way I hold my phone, because I'm usually in the middle, just even sort of getting my thumb down to the home button. And I would imagine with a taller phone, I'm going to be holding it up a little bit, probably just slightly higher. So I'm a little concerned about that,
I would imagine with the, especially with the Plus
thumb stretch,
you're probably going to, if you end up being one of those people who would want to use the reachability thing, I think that you would probably just adjust your grip to, and sort of work that into your workflow of using your phone when you do it one handed. You're just going to
definitely
stay down at the bottom. And I mean, I totally get what you're saying. If you're holding your phone where you can very easily reach everything with one hand, With your thumb, it's kind of uncomfortable to bring your thumb down there. But if you just adjust your grip slightly, I would say that it would be almost second nature very quickly.
Yeah. It's going to be a relearning of phone grip, I guess, probably. Yeah.
Well, with a larger phone, even just the 6, I think there's going to be a relearning of phone grip. You know, you could go from the 4S to the 5 without doing a whole lot, but even to the 6, there's a relearning, and certainly to the 6 Plus.
Yeah. It's a huge curve for me.
It's huge. Yeah, it's huge. No, and it is. It is huge, especially, you know, compared to obviously the 5S. But it's gorgeous, right? And it really feels like, I mean, to use that word, phablet, right?
Yeah.
It definitely.
Oh, God, I hate that word.
I know you do, Jeff.
We use gigantophone here.
I like
there you go. But see, that's the wrong word. I intentionally chose phablet because it really does feel like an iPad, right? It feels more like a small iPad than it does like a large phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that to me is a good thing. It's not, they didn't take the UI of the phone and just kind of make it bigger. They took the UI of the iPad and brought it down. And I'm hoping that apps and things like that that are built for the iPad will get the more iPad-like version, even for third-party apps. I mean, for Apple's apps, that's definitely how it works. But I hope for third-party apps, it works that way too. So you get kind of that large, it's large enough now where you get that large screen feel, even though it's quote unquote only 5.5 inches. It's not right. I mean, it's not the size of, it's not 7.9 or anything like that, but it definitely has that. It's big enough to feel like a tablet, you know, the whole thing where you've got the scrolling, you know, mail in landscape view, mail and messages have the extra pane on the side that doesn't feel crammed. It feels right. And
cool.
And books, you know, when you turn the thing into portrait mode, you get 2 columns on it like you would on an iPad, and it feels right. It doesn't feel crammed. It's the right thing.
Now that is a really intriguing aspect of the Plus, because you're kind of coming upon this new form factor. Right.
Right.
Where you.
Well, new for Apple.
Well, new for Apple. Yes. Certainly new for Apple, not for the world.
Sure.
But you have the more of the benefits of the tablet, where you have a lot of room, where you have where it's comfortable to look at a lot of content and interact and do some interesting things. But at the same time, even with the mini, it's one of those things where you're going to have a little bit of wrist fatigue at some point. And with the phone, I imagine it's not much heavier than the 5S, which is, it's something that it's comfortable to hold in your hand, even for hours. If you want to treat it as, you know, like a small paperback and you want to read a lot, and especially because you can just bring it up closer to your face and it's not a big deal.
Right. No, so that's kind of the reason I decided to go with the 6 Plus. I know it's going to be an adjustment. It's entirely possible I'm going to hate the size that there will be moments where it is a liability to have this much larger thing. It does fit in my pockets, no problem. So I'm not worried about that. I'm not worried about sitting down with it in my pocket. That kind of thing is fine. What I am worried about is in fact the very thing that interests me is its use as a potential replacement for my iPad mini, right? You know, when I read, when I'm on a plane and I want to watch movies, but the problem there is, what, especially watching movies, potentially even reading, I like to, with my iPad mini, I have a case that's a folio type case, so I can set it up on its end and it just freestanding, and now I can watch a movie or read. Certainly, I'm sure there's a possibility of having a case like that for the 6 Plus, but I don't know that I want the 6 Plus with that kind of case on it in my pocket 100% of the time.
Yeah.
So I you know, there's this, it's big enough to be that, potentially big enough to be that replacement for the iPad mini, but I'm not sure it the functionality, specifically because of the case and the standing, makes sense. And I'm willing to take that gamble, obviously, because that's what I did. Yeah. Yeah.
It'll be interesting.
It was interesting to hear you mention the UI thing, because I need to point out, because I'm sure people, I've already had people call me out on it. You know, I was adamantly against the larger phone, and I'm still in your same camp, Dave. I think I feel like I'm going to probably at some point, at least a few points, feel like this thing is just too dang huge. It'll be interesting to see if the stuff that I'm buying it for offsets it. But what really made me okay with my own hypocrisy was the UI stuff. Exactly what you're saying. When I saw the UI things more than any other feature and went, okay, you know, they're really bringing that tablet UI to this device. That's going to make a difference in terms of workflow and productivity. And I same kind of thing. I'm in the camp, you know, I don't have a mini anymore. I gave it up for my Air because with the Air, I felt I was able, it had a good balance of size and productivity to sort of weight and portability.
Yep.
And now it'll be nice to have a device where, hey, I don't want to take the Air this time. I can probably get away with this thing. So I'm hoping that use case is going to be powerful enough to sort of offset those times when I'm like, I really hate this big giant boat phone.
even in the 5 minutes I spent with it, there was that obvious, the thing that we love about Apple is, and I really think that it all comes down to this, they spend so much time using their own stuff before it comes out and testing it, and they iterate, right? They don't just say, this is good enough. And one example of that is this tablet stuff, right? Finding that perfect medium for a device of this size, not what we envisioned a device of this size to do, but as we've used it, what makes sense? Let's test this, let's test that. And they've narrowed it down. Reachability was another one of those things with the double tap. When you double tap on the iPhone 6, the top of the screen comes down right about to the halfway point. I expected the 6 Plus to come to the halfway point. It does not. It comes down to the same distance from the bottom as the 6 does. So it actually comes down a little further, which is what you want. Right? Sure. They found the optimal distance for the thumb from the bottom, and that's what they went with. But again, it wasn't just Apple punching the ticket of saying, bring it down halfway, ship it, right? You know, they just don't do that. And that's that. I really believe that is the secret sauce. That is their stock and trade is the fact that they have this massively iterative design philosophy there, and it permeates everything.
Yeah,
and that's really smart. And for the people that are looking at this as a replacement for their iPad Mini, that's great. And I look at it and I'm like, it doesn't matter. It's just flat out too big for me. And of course, for each person, it's different. But then I have another thing that's a stumbling block for me with the 6 Plus. And that's the fact that I like to segregate my power usage. So I like knowing that when I'm reading a book or doing web surfing in a coffee shop or whatever, that's happening on my iPad Air or my iPad Mini. And I'm not using the power in my iPhone to handle those tasks.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I wanted to jump back to the sheer bigness of this thing for a second, because I think I had the same thought as just about everybody on the internet, as evidenced by the fact that Ars Technica put out a cutout PDF of the three phones to compare. Because immediately when I saw this thing, I'm thinking, man, do I want that giant one or do I want the slightly less giant one when I get it? And so I printed out the size chart and cut out a little piece of cardboard and stuck it in my pocket and thought, man, this is big, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be too big. But at the same time, I haven't played with it. I don't know. So it could be too big, but I have the feeling that, especially because this is Apple, that when I pick this thing up and I start using it, I'm going to say, this feels right. It feels like exactly the right size that I want it to be for what it is. It's not too big, and it's clearly not going to be too small. Dave, is that what your ultimate overall experience was when you played with it, that you thought, yeah, this is exactly the right size?
That was it. It was very quickly obvious that this is, it's the right size for its size, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. It actually does.
Yeah. And so it really came down to, okay, well, which one do I actually want? Right. As Jeff said, there is no wrong answer. There is no right answer. Apple has given us the choice for years. It's always been Apple has made the choice for us. Right.
I really appreciated that.
Yeah. But now they don't. Right. They let us choose. And I was talking with Jeff Carlson was there and Bob Levitis was there. And I can't remember his name. The guy from Touch Arcade kind of showed up and we were all at the same table together. And we started highlighting the fact that and I think it was Jeff, but I forget who it was. But someone, not me, said, you know, there is a capability difference between the 6 and the 6 Plus. There's this optical image stabilization and the battery lasts way longer, right? I was like, oh, yeah.
Right.
Okay, yeah. That's enough to convince me. Yeah, because either one is fine. They're both the right size for what they are.
Yeah.
So, you know, that was sort of what tipped the scales for me.
And you don't get the special landscape mode on the 6, right?
No.
Correct.
No, you don't. And you know, you can, there's this thing, if you go into settings and displays and brightness,
yes.
There's a thing called display zoom.
Yep.
On the 6 Plus, it zooms things in. It's very slight and it's really nice because they show examples of like three apps, mail and messages and the home screen. They've got like a phonied up home screen, right? And so right there, as you choose between normal and zoomed, it's very slightly zoomed. It actually makes the 6 Plus effectively function as though it's the larger, it's like you zoomed in on the 6, right? So you no longer get the extra things. It makes it more phone-like than tablet-like. And if you want larger things on the screen, it's fine because of the GPU in there. It totally calculates everything fine on the fly. And I tried it for a while. I had no complaints about it. It wasn't jaggy. It was, you know, it works totally great. But I hope and plan to use it in normal mode because I want the tablet features on that thing. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was a really, really cool feature. And of course it was one of the many things that were either glossed over or completely omitted from the primary presentation.
Right.
But I mean, it's one of those things that there are definitely going to be people out there who immediately switch that on and that is how they're going to use their 6 Plus.
Yeah. Right. So. Yeah, it's the, you know, I mean, I hate to stereotype it, but it's like, it's the old man mode, right?
Yeah,
I want
yeah, exactly.
a 6 Plus because it's a big phone, which is different than I want the 6 Plus because it's a really portable tablet.
Yep.
Right? And that's really what those two modes are to me is you're just kind of switching the primary function of the device. Yeah. And either is okay.
Yep. Okay, so iOS 8 is launching September 17th, and Apple has ceded the Gold Master to its developers. I am playing with it, and it's still crashy for me, at least on my iPad.
Uh-oh.
That may be an issue with I think I did an upgrade. It might go away with a restore, and I've seen that happen in the past, but we'll see. And I've submitted some bugs for what it's worth, so maybe they fix that. I haven't tested, but more interestingly,
wait, the OS is actually crashy for you, or apps are crashy?
The OS on my iPad Air.
I've been experiencing app crashes, which is to be expected, I think, because you know not every developer's sort of rolled out their iOS 8 compatible stuff.
Yes.
I don't think I've seen any too many OS level crashes personally.
I get it. Well, in the betas, the non-GMs, I got it one or more crashes every day of the OS. Typically when I jump into the app switcher and like I said, I didn't do a complete restore. I did an upgrade just because I was feeling lazy. So that may be the issue right there. So,
but that's how everybody's going to do it come Wednesday, right? That the upgrade is what's going to happen for 99% of the folks who are doing this upgrade.
That's true.
It's a fair way to test.
But I
will say that in the beta, I've experienced some periods of unresponsiveness in apps for some reason, where it'll just like literally nothing, I can't tap anything, or it's super delayed taps. And I don't know what that's all about, especially in the music app. I've seen that personally.
I haven't really noticed that, but I actually upgraded from beta 4 or whatever the latest beta was before the GM. So I upgraded from iOS 8 beta to iOS 8 GM, not mm-hmm. from 7 to 8. So I think that may not be as similar of a case as what most people will go through.
That's true. Yeah. I updated my 5S from 7 to the 8 GM.
Okay.
And it has been way less crashy than my iPad mini, which I updated from a beta to the GM.
That's interesting. That's the same experience with me, Dave. Yeah. I did exactly the same thing. I had not put it on my phone until the GM was out.
Yep. Yep. That's
but
what
I did have
too.
It on my iPad.
Yeah, I'm doing the same thing actually. So I haven't experienced any crashes on the 5S, the loaner 5S that I loaded iOS 8 onto from T-Mobile. Oh,
they're gonna love you.
That is brilliant.
Which honestly, I don't think it'll matter because by the time I take it back, it will have been released officially. So who the hell cares?
It wouldn't matter anyhow.
No, they don't care. They only said if I have find my iPhone, aka the activation lock. Enabled on there when I return it to them, they're going to charge me for the full price of the phone.
As they should.
It can't
be undone. I mean, that's a huge problem. I'm getting lots of people. I've had a few of my listeners who have emailed me to say, I got this phone and it's activation locked. And it's just like all you can email them back is, I'm so sorry.
Well, there are ways around that, I think, still.
All the research I did, it's pretty darn locked. Unless you can get the original owner to come back and undo it.
Well, this is we talked about this maybe a couple months ago that there was a service. I don't know if it's still around, and maybe that's what your research has yielded. But it there was a third party website that you could redirect. I think using probably your host's file and doing the activation through your computer.
Proxy.
Doing something like that.
But moguls aren't going to be able to do that.
Very true. Yes. Moving on. Swift, the programming language, it has hit GM status for iOS. It's still moving along. It's still being fluid for OS X. And this was kind of interesting. So they, let's see here. They pushed iCloud Photo Library back to beta. So I guess it's beta status. Does that mean that you have to be a developer to use it, or it's just one of those things that says beta?
That I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah.
More interestingly, SMS continuity has been delayed to October, which kind of sucks because I was really looking forward to that. Now, I wonder if that means the same thing for phone calls. Because I tried doing it. I tried making a phone call from my iPad via the iPhone, and it does not work.
I
did that.
You did it?
Yeah, but it triggered my phone to make a call. I had to take the call on my phone, not on my iPad.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's how they want it to work ultimately. I think
it's not how I expected it to be. That's right.
I think it's probably going to work where you're doing speakerphone on your iPad.
I have a feeling iOS 8 is going to be to a degree hobbled until October.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm expecting that's when we'll get OS 10 Yosemite.
Yep.
And then at that point, we'll also get some update for iOS 8. That enables a lot of these promised features that simply aren't going to be there next Wednesday.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask Dave, on the 6 and the 6 Plus, they said during the keynote that all apps currently will, at least the ones that are optimized for the 5 and 5S, those will just be scaled up magically. So nothing has to be rewritten to look to be full screen on those phones. I imagine you played with some of the apps that are third party on the phones, right?
I did not. There weren't really a whole lot of options to do that.
Okay.
I don't think. I'm trying to... I feel like I launched something that was scaled. I mean, I was using the Zoom things, which takes advantage of the scaler. That scaler is killer, right? I mean, it's it's a whole lot different than it was 10 years ago.
You're talking about old man mode or the...
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but even old man mode, I mean, it was crisp and clear and all of that. So I'm not worried about it. I'm not worried about this weird downscaling that's happening, right? You know, that whole thing. I'm just not worried about it.
I wouldn't...
It looks good.
When I heard about it too, immediately I thought, oh, that's bad. But then I realized Apple's not going to put something out that looks bad. Because that's their whole—that's their whole deal. It looks really good. Some designers may be a little peeved because I think that one of the tweets I read said, "Say goodbye to one pixel lines." But I think honestly, we said goodbye to one pixel lines when we went to Retina.
Right.
So, but then again, it's, you know, two pixel lines or whatever. But yeah. So anyway, all apps that are tall apps will just be upscaled, and then developers can choose to utilize the space more efficiently if they want to. So that is cool. Now moving on to Apple Pay, which is a whole lot more than just NFC on the iPhone 6, right? So the primary thing, the big thing that everybody was expecting is you got the NFC on the new iPhone, and there's going to be some kind of solution for putting all your credit cards into your passbook, and then you can just hold your phone on top of one of those NFC scanners and pay for stuff at the store. It's pretty cool. I really like the implementation. The details I'm not entirely sure of, but I'll ask you, Dave, in a second. But basically, the way it works is with whatever credit cards you have in there, you authenticate with Touch ID, you wave your phone at the scanner, and the stuff that I really like about it is that it creates a one-time use card that the reader sees. It pulls the money from there, and then that one-time card goes away. Apple does not know about what you purchased. They don't store that. And the retailer does not have access to your real card number. So if their stuff is compromised, then you don't have to worry about getting a new card. And
so, Dave, correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't that just what NFC is?
That's exactly right. Yeah, this is how NFC works. It creates a token. It exchanges the token. It's very similar to a lot of other slightly more secure or slightly less insecure than a typical credit card transaction is. And that's just what NFC is. Yeah, yeah. You would get that on anything that uses NFC. That's
okay, right. So if you had one of those special Tap to Pay cards and you did the Tap to Pay, same deal.
Yes.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Good to know.
That's right.
Now the cards themselves, those numbers are, is it the actual number that is stored in the, I don't think they're even calling it the secure enclave anymore. It's a different thing maybe, but are they even storing those card numbers, or are they just simply storing the ability to utilize that method of payment?
Yeah. I think you authenticate and get a token and that's the end of it.
Okay. So your card is stored in there, but not as not the plain card number. It's some other token.
The ability to use the card is what's stored in the phone.
Gotcha.
Right.
So that's right. I enjoy that, and yeah, the fact that Apple and nobody else can see what you're buying. Or I wonder if they can even see where you're shopping. I'd imagine they see where you're shopping, because you're probably going to still see that on your bank invoice. Otherwise, that might actually be kind of frustrating because you don't know what the hell happened.
Are you talking about the merchant or Apple? That data wouldn't necessarily be sent back to Apple for any
right.
Reason.
Apple's
in that part of the process.
Yeah, they made it very clear that Apple wouldn't be getting any of that data, and the merchant wouldn't be getting any data other than Joe Schmo paid for this.
I don't know. I didn't get that clear out of it. I think the merchant, Apple just said, that's an agreement between you and the merchant and the bank, and whatever your bank says it's going to do and whatever the merchant says it's going to do, you know, you're going to have to okay it. But once you're in their little agreement, then, you know, they're going to do whatever you agreed to.
And just to be clear, I don't know if you meant to infer this, Michael, but the merchant doesn't get your name. They simply get your money or.
Yes. Or, yeah. Anyway. That's what I meant. Yeah. They don't get your name or any of that sort of right. information, which is cool. I like that. Mm-hmm. I like the privacy. Yeah. It's clear that Apple is.
But again, this is all just NFC.
Okay.
Right. Now, I mean, Apple's got a UI on the iPhone. That is their. That's part of what they bring to the table that's new,
sure.
right? And then the other thing that they bring to the table is it's going – they're acting sort of as a merchant provider in or a payment gateway, I guess is a better – they're working with payment gateways is what it is. But right. people have to opt in. Merchants have to opt in to Apple Pay. And more importantly, banks have to opt in. Yeah. Right. So, you know, if you've got a local, you know, if you've got your local, I don't know, Frost Bank credit card, you may not be able to put that in your Apple Pay wallet, but you could take your Citibank credit card and put it in because Citibank has partnered with Apple on this.
And what they
that's
say they
where
have
things get a little weird.
83% of banks with the top banks and the few second tier banks that they've signed on board. But it's going to take a while for them to get the. Small banks, even if they can, those really small regional banks are going to be tricky, and probably a lot of the like, what do you call them? Not savings and loans.
Yeah, you're right.
Like credit unions.
It's the credit unions. Yeah.
Now we did end up with what I see as a potentially big setback for the whole NFC adoption thing on a broad scale in the United States today. And that's Walmart's announcement that they're not signing on to support Apple Pay.
Well, and Best Buy, too, which is even
that,
more shocking
that is
to
confusing.
Me. Now, do we know? Because you have Apple stores or mini Apple stores or whatever they are, Apple-ish stores inside Best Buy. Are those run by Apple or are those run by Best Buy?
Those are run by Best Buy.
Yeah.
Okay. Back in the day when they did CompUSA, Apple actually ran the store within a store inside CompUSA. The people that staffed that section, because I knew a couple guys... were actually Apple employees.
Right. No, now it's, in fact, we have a buddy. We have a mutual buddy who goes around and trains the Best Buy employees to be as much like Apple employees as they can be, right? But they are Apple employees.
So,
they're Best Buy employees.
So how bad is that relationship with Best Buy that they can't...
Yeah.
They have their store inside there, but they can't get them to adopt their new payment platform.
See, my guess is we're not going to go out of our way to adopt this, to adopt NFC because it's Apple Pay, right? But every merchant.
I can shed some light on that.
Oh, then I'm going to stop guessing and let you do this. Go.
Okay. So Best Buy implemented NFC payment system a few years ago. And in 2011, they dropped it because people weren't using it and it was far too expensive to maintain. So they have signed on with a different system, and Walmart has signed on with the same company. And they have a service called Current C that they're supporting, and they haven't rolled it out yet. But the deal is you have to put the Current C app on your smartphone, and then it gives you a QR code or some sort of barcode that you scan at the register, and then that's linked directly back to your bank account. So what they're doing is they're trying to create a system where the merchant controls the entire transaction instead of letting the bank control the transaction.
See, and that was the route that I was convinced Apple was going to go down.
Right.
With iBeacon and low energy Bluetooth. So it was surprising that they jumped on the NFC thing to me. So it's interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm not convinced that Apple Pay, I've talked about this in various formats in the last couple of days, but I'm not gaga over Apple Pay just because it's like, ooh, Apple does NFC now. And granted, there's more to it than that, right? You Apple Pay will do online purchases too. And that's an interesting thing. But yeah, I think Apple, there needs to be something else brought to the table. Now, the other thing that's happening is a lot of merchants, right now it's 220,000, right? Which is nothing, right? But sometime in 2015, a lot of merchants are going to need to replace their card swipe machines because of chip and sign.
Chip and pin. Okay.
Right, no, but they don't have to enable the NFC feature on those new readers.
No, they don't have to. But a lot of them, my guess is that a lot of those readers that they get for chip and sign are going to have NFC capabilities. So that might be free. Right now, the headache of dealing with NFC is not necessarily free, but it might be made simpler by your merchant provider, whoever that is, if Apple can convince them to partner. Like, you know, we do online payments for Mac Geek Gab and Backbeat Media, and we use a merchant provider or a payment gateway, sorry, called AuthorizeNet. And last night we got an email saying, hey, we're going to support Apple Pay. Now, AuthorizeNet, you can do the swipe thing with them, and you can do, but mostly it's an online thing. Apple Pay is only supported online.
Yep.
So, which is great, but it's only supported online, and your bank needs to support it, and right, there's all these things, and so it's like we're going to go through the process and see if we can make it work because we use Bank of America, and that might work. But we're going to do it because we're Apple geeks, and we should.
I think a big part of this, and I don't know, maybe I'm giving too much power to the consumer, but I'm wondering with the number of iPhones that are out there, this was another reason why I thought they were going to go with something more like low energy Bluetooth and iBeacon, right? Because they already have hundreds of, you know, is it hundreds of millions at this point of devices deployed that have those technologies already in them? And now the new technology requires new hardware, not only on the merchant side, but also on the consumer side. And you could really get consumers to drive this, though, if it's convenient enough and the experience is good enough. And I was very impressed by what they showed off. I think it's a very nice experience that they've created in terms of buying stuff. And I want to use it. You know, it's like, yeah, I want to use that. You know, but if you get people going into merchants saying, I want to play with Apple Pay, and they keep hearing it over and over again, you know, it's sort of like that death. What do they call it? Death by a thousand nicks or 10 million nicks or whatever. Like you keep picking at them. Like, why don't you have Apple Pay? And if they start hearing it enough,
right?
You know, maybe they just give in.
And see, to me, that's the biggest component of Apple Pay potentially being successful. It's not anything else that Apple's bringing to the table. It's just that so many people have iPhones. And just by sheer volume and the number of complaints that retailers may get, they may finally just say, okay, fine, we'll do the Apple Pay thing. Will you shut up now?
And correct me if I'm wrong, because I hadn't read about this too much, but I was kind of looking into this today because, you know, chip and pin is a big deal overseas, it's Europe and other places. And there's been a lot of confusion about this 2015 date. So I was looking into that. So it is like, merchants are going to have the option to do the pin thing or not, right? And isn't there some incentive?
No, consumers will have the option. Merchants have to be able to support it.
To support the pin or just the chip?
The chip. Right?
Yeah, the chip.
It's chip and sign, right?
Yeah, well, but what I was reading was that the merchants, if they are going to be incentivized to do to also upgrade to the systems that support the PIN so that consumers have the option to use PIN, because if they use PIN, then there's a liability factor to this. So if it's chip and sign, liability is going to be left on the merchant for fraud. If it's chip and PIN, then that absolves, at least one of the articles I was reading says that would indemnify or, you know, protect the merchant from those fraudulent charges. Then it would be back the other way. So that's how they were going to supposedly try and get more people to sort of push pin versus sign. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's
It makes sense. I didn't think it was that heavy-handed, but it might be.
Yeah,
because I think the credit card companies really want the pin thing because of the security aspects of it.
Yeah, yeah. Now, because I'm not super familiar with this, and I think a lot of other people don't understand exactly what's going on. So currently, as credit cards stand in the U.S., they have the magnetic band at the back, and they have the numbers printed into the card. When it changes to chip and pin or chip and sign, first of all, what are the differences?
So chip and sign is, it still uses the mag stripe, right?
Okay.
It, And there's no PIN involved in the transaction.
But there's a chip.
Is that right? I think there's a chip that goes into a reader. So it's more like how you...
It's got the smart card in it.
You slide it into a slot. I thought it was this kind of thing. This is how it was described, how it works in Europe. And I've never seen it. But a couple of people have emailed me to say, no, you have a little chip on the card and you slide the thing in and it makes contact with a thing. And then you have to plug in a PIN number to authorize the transaction. So chip goes in, makes contact, all the information is transferred, and then you do the PIN. So I figured it would work the same way. I figured the new readers, you stick the little chip part in, it makes contact, and then you would sign on, you know, the digital display or whatever, or enter in your PIN.
Right, but here's the problem in the U.S., is that the PIN is actually stored encrypted on the card. Okay, it's not stored in the cloud, if you will. And I could be entirely wrong about this, but I don't think I am. And so in order to change your PIN, you have to do that at an ATM. Oh. And ATMs in the U.S. do not support encoding. I mean, it's a hardware change on every ATM that needs to do this, right?
Because that's going to happen.
Right. Well, this is why we're moving to chip and sign. So it's this half step, right? Chip and PIN it's entirely encrypted on the card, but we don't have the infrastructure in this country for us to be able to change or program that PIN without going, you know, I mean, in a wide scale way. So that's why we go to chip and signature. It reads the card number off the chip so that it's doing that in an encrypted way. And again, it's a half step, and then you still just sign the form, and that's it. So I don't think that merchants are going to be liable, because it's the bank's fault, if you want to assign blame somewhere. It's the bank's fault by not having ATMs that support programming the PIN, that we have to do chip and sign. So the merchants are going to have these machines that can read the cards and presumably take your PIN if you had one, but you probably won't have one. So it's chip and sign.
Why?
I mean, why do we have to be so
idiotic?
Well, because we've been doing this for decades, and we have an infrastructure that needs to be replaced, and that's not a cheap process. So
why Apple brings us Apple Pay, right?
Yeah, but again, we're back to the banks choosing convenience over security.
Yeah.
Which has been the case every time. Credit cards are the most insecure or the least secure way of paying for anything, right? I've said this so many times, that cash is way more secure, because when you pay with cash, the only amount, the maximum amount that is at risk for fraud is the amount that you paid with. Right. That's it. You know, you pay somebody cash. It's possible that the cashier puts it in their pocket, says, you never gave me the money. And somehow you can't prove that they put it in their pocket. And now you're out the $100, right? Or whatever, you know, whatever it is you paid for.
Yeah.
But with a credit card, your entire credit limit is exposed to fraud. Even if you bought $5 worth of Starbucks on your credit card. Right. So but the banks are OK with this. They love their 2% or 3% fees. So they want you to use them, and they're willing to eat 100% of the fraud charges just so you don't stop using your credit card. And it's still that way. We've got chip and sign. It's like, yay, woo, but not really.
Yeah. Not any more secure, really.
Not really any more secure. That's right. Yeah. Okay.
I guess the number is not exposed on the front of the card anymore, right?
It doesn't have to be exposed, correct?
But it probably will.
But probably will be still.
But it probably, yeah. I mean, I have my personal Citibank MasterCard has a chip in it now, and it's, you know, it's the numbers are there, the mag stripe is there, and the chip's there. So
you know what's
like,
funny?
Hey,
what was funny is I for the longest time did have cards that had chips on them.
Yeah.
And
we tried to do this 20 years ago.
I was noticing today, none of my cards have those chips on them anymore. I hadn't even realized they had gone away. I wasn't paying that much attention.
Right. Which shows you how often they were being used. Yeah. You didn't even know they were gone.
I tried Citibank, to use mine all the time, and they would never, like, the whole touchless system or touch system, tap system.
Yeah.
Not a single merchant will let me use it when I'm like, can I just, no, don't use that. It doesn't work.
Doesn't work. Right. That's right. And there's no incentive for the merchants, and there still won't be in 2015, as long as they take the, but they do have to have the reader to take the chip. If they don't have that, then they are liable for the fraud. If they do have it, then I think it still falls back on the banks.
Ah, okay. So it's
it's chip and sign is where we're going next year. Okay. That's right.
So I want to rein this back into the Apple Pay.
Sorry.
no, that's totally fine. So my first question is, they say that they're supporting Amex, Visa, MasterCard, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm. Some banks.
Okay. So the bank has to be on board in addition to having one of those cards that they use, correct?
Correct.
So my local bank back in Rockford that I still use will probably not work unless they're on that list, even though I have a MasterCard that I use with them, correct?
Bingo, correct. Bango.
Okay. Right. And how does your iTunes account play into all of this?
Because the credit card that you've linked to your iTunes account is the default credit card for Apple Pay.
Out of the box.
But then you can change that by taking a photograph of whatever credit card you want to use, and then this little verification process, and then right on your iPhone, and then you're done.
Okay, so you can't use your iTunes account to pay for groceries.
No. You're using the credit card associated with your iTunes account.
Well, and frankly, when you're using your iTunes account, you're always using the credit card associated with your iTunes account. They're kind of one and the same.
Yeah, but I guess in my head, I'm thinking, oh well, iTunes has no problem processing my credit card, even though it is a local bank. And if I can just use iTunes as my card, then I can just use iTunes as my payment source. So
yeah,
that
you won't be able to do that.
Okay, interesting. I think I'm going to have to do some more research on how this stuff works because it's really convoluted.
I mean, that would be my assumption, right? Was that your sort of reading of it too, Jeff? I mean, if your bank card isn't that you have registered with iTunes is not supported by Apple Pay, then you're not going to be able to even use that as your default card.
Correct.
Okay. Now,
There was something. I have PayPal as my main iTunes payment method. And there was something the other day that was like, it wouldn't let me do something until I went and essentially walked away from PayPal and put it on a credit card.
Was there a rumor that PayPal was going to be supported, which I thought was weird, but obviously that wasn't announced.
Yeah, right.
I wouldn't think they'd be on board with it.
Yeah, I haven't seen anything from PayPal saying that they are going to support
Apple Pay. Seems somewhat of a competitor to PayPal at this point to me.
No, because it doesn't. It's not a bank. PayPal is basically an online bank.
I think that's
right.
Taking it a bit far.
You can store money there.
Yeah. Anyway,
I don't think the federal government classifies them as a bank. I don't think they don't.
Oh no, they definitely are a bank.
Okay.
Do they have to carry insurance and all that stuff?
Oh yeah, we garnished. This will be the first time I say this in public in 5 years, but Mac Heist's account when they tried to screw us, and we won a lawsuit against them. We garnished their PayPal account and froze several $1 million there. They're not a bank.
I know you can do that, but do they have FDIC insurance? Like,
yep.
Yeah. Oh, they do. Okay.
Yep.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. I mean, I have a PayPal debit card.
I know. I have a PayPal credit card, too.
So, yeah. Anyway, let's see here. So, I guess that's all on Apple Pay. The big, giant news, of course, that we're leaving for the end is the Apple Watch. It's not called the iWatch. There are three different versions. Actually, you could say there are six versions if you want. So there's a 38 and a 42 millimeter sizes, right?
So you have large and larger, right? It's not large and small.
I think it's large and small, but there are a lot of people who think, oh, it's so thick. It looks terrible.
Well, I know Dave's seen it. I actually was curious about that, Dave. The one that you demoed was the 42 or the 38?
I demoed the 42. And 42 is it used to be considered a large watch. These days it's not, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of, and I'm a watch geek, right? But I've got some watches that are 46s. I don't think I have any that are 48s. 46 feels big, A 38 is small on a man's wrist. It's probably a little on the big side on a woman's wrist. It, again, in a,
like
just
a kid too.
Overly generalizing. Yeah, although you know my son's got one of the new. Although my son is 5'10 now, so that's actually stupid. I'm not going to talk about that. He's like a man. It's fine. a 38 would be fine on a kid, I think, if you want to get your kid a $400 or $500 watch.
No, I'm not going to.
Right.
But people will. Yeah. But people, kids are going to want them.
Yeah, totally.
For sure.
No, and I would say that you know, my wife actually wears one of the new System 51s from Swatch too, some of the time, and she's got this other watch, a Hamilton. Her Hamilton is a 34, I think, maybe a 36. It's it's a little more petite. And then I think the System 51 is a 40. So I would say it's small and large, but I mean, it's all relative, you know, the trends could change in 5 years.
Sure.
Yeah,
but nobody really cares about the size so much as, what it can do, because this is a new product category for Apple, and they talked surprisingly a lot about the watch face itself, and how customizable that it is, and honestly, there's a lot of neat options in there. So you can, aside from just simple design. There are a lot of interesting ways to interpret time. I like the solar system one. I'm sure that's surprising to everybody.
Totally shocked.
Yeah. But you can also put a lot of really cool information right there. So, and there's, of course, there's a raise. So you raise your wrist up to your face, you turn it up as if you're going to look at your watch, and it immediately turns on the display, which is very cool. And then you see all the stuff that you have put on your default watch face. There's only so much stuff that you can put on there, but you can put a few things on there. And then there are things called glances, right? So you raise the thing up to your face, and then you flick up from the bottom, and you can swipe through a myriad of different glances, as they call them, little bits of information, it's like a dashboard with each page being a widget. So you can have your, if you have a deliveries app, or if you have a calendar, a bunch of other things like that, your alarm clocks, weather, maps, I'll put those things into glances, which is very cool. And then I guess the thing that is really worth talking about is how you interact with this thing in general. And that is this thing called the Digital Crown. So it is a touch screen, and it is a flexible touch screen that also can interpret pressure, right? So there are two physical controls. There's the Digital Crown, which is a knob. It's in the same vein as the classic, I didn't really realize that it was called a crown on a watch, but the knob on the side of the watch.
The winder. Always call it the thing you wind the watch with. The little windy thing is what it looks like.
Yeah. So you can turn that, you can press in on it. That the pressing in action is the home button. And then there's a button below it, which I believe is a favorites.
Has Apple said what that button is for yet? I thought it was kind of a mystery.
That's the the new communication system where you touch and draw and things like that. It activates that, they said during the keynote.
On what
it's
I
like
have
the launcher
seen
for the what are the what, they had a name for the communication system tap and it haptic messaging. Is that what they called it? What they call it? I can't remember.
Well, that's for the vibrating.
Well, there is a vibrating part in there. That's their taptic engine.
That's weird. By the way,
the taptic thing. So you probably experienced it, even though these were demo watches. You didn't actually get to interact with a watch because it's still kind of under development mode. But they had watches that were running demo scenarios, kind of in the same way that if you saw the original iPhone in 2007 at Macworld, it was kind of playing a loop. Although you couldn't even touch the thing, but they let people put them on their wrists, and I imagine there were examples where it gave you the taptic feedback, right?
Yeah. So you're right and you're wrong. There were two different there were watches out on the demo floor with two different software builds. The ones that they put on us, and they put them on. That was something that was non-negotiable, and I think it was to make sure it was tight enough so that you did feel the Taptic feedback.
Okay.
The ones they put on us were running a 4-minute loop demo that did include some Taptic stuff. The ones that Apple employees wore to do the demo were interactive. But clearly, I mean, it's, you know, this is no secret. Apple told us it's not finished yet, right?
Yep.
So clearly the employees knew what path they could and couldn't walk, and you wouldn't run into any, you know, under construction signs kind of thing.
Yep.
But they had an interactive thing, and there were moments where I got to touch it a little bit.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but it was more about, you know, making nice friends with the guy and you know, touching it. Sure. That's all it was.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. But what was it? So because of that, he put the watch on me, and you know, we got it right, and it was very comfortable. And then I basically stood there with the watch at my side, it was my hands at my side, watching him do the demo on his watch, because that's where it was interactive.
Yeah.
And about, you know, halfway through, I thought, aren't I supposed to feel this thing, you know, buzzing on me or whatever? And there are a lot of people in the room and hustle and bustle, so I chose to pay more attention to my wrist at that point because I figured I was probably just ignoring it. And then I felt it. And my problem was not that I hadn't felt it prior, but that I was expecting something very different. I was expecting it to buzz like my cell phone buzzes, right? To have that vibration go on my wrist.
Uh-huh.
And like the Pebble does, right? The Pebble, it's like the cell phone. It's got that
very
same
jarring.
Kind of, yeah. This is literally like someone tapped me on the wrist.
That is cool.
It is cool. And it's very subtle, but once you're kind of tuned into it, it's very noticeable, but again, not jarring. So yeah, that it was interesting. It was like, wow, how do you do that? You know, that, like,
and that, yeah. That app is called the Digital Touch app, and it has like four forms of communication. So it has Sketch, so you can draw stuff and it displays out on the other person's watch. You have Tap, which they'll actually feel the taps. It had the heartbeat thing that they showed off. And I think they didn't show off the coolest feature of it, which is the walkie-talkie.
Yeah, that is one thing they didn't show off. But yeah, so there's a walkie-talkie
feature, like voice to voice. So
I
you
like
can
that.
Do a little, you know.
That is very cool.
Sound bite from device to device, from watch to watch.
Yeah, so there's of course Siri on there, so you can ask her typical Siri questions. You can also
voice though. There's no audio feedback. Did you notice that?
I missed that. I thought there was.
No audio feedback.
You get the sound. You get the Siri sound.
Oh, they didn't.
She doesn't read back. There's no. I don't think there's enough to have a text to voice synthesizer maybe in there.
I don't know.
Go back and watch the demo. You don't hear Siri's voice at all.
Yes, so, I totally agree with you on that point, but I would be very surprised if there was no voice feedback on that thing. It may just be a product of it being under development still.
Yeah.
It's got
a speaker in it.
Yeah.
Can we jump back to the digital crown real quick, though?
Yeah.
One thing I'm wondering about. So in the screenshots, and no one's talked about this, so I'm going to throw it out there if anybody has thought about it. The digital crown on each watch seems to have a different... Like on the different models, seems to have a different color.
Yeah.
Is that hard? Like, is that like embedded into... Because I noticed like one of them has a red one. Or is that something that could be swapped out? Because they seem to be matched to the bands.
Yeah, they match the bands. But the bands pop off.
Is that a swappable piece? Or is that a... You know, like if I have the one with the red, is it always going to be red? And how do I... Is that a choice when you buy the watch?
I did notice that, yeah.
I don't think, where are you seeing, I don't remember seeing, I mean, there was the crown matched the case. So on the edition, it was gold.
On the end of the crown.
The little cap, yeah.
There's so a little inset cap.
Black or red, I've seen.
I've seen red, black, white. I don't know if there's other colors.
Huh.
Yeah, I had, I noticed that too.
I thought
too,
it'd be really cool if it was digital and you could actually... You know, if it was like an LED controlled thing and you could actually change it in settings,
it
would be even cooler.
That would
but
be
I don't
fun.
Think it, but I don't think it's like that. It looks too opaque.
I would imagine that if it does vary, I thought that it was either just some sort of byproduct of the rendering, because these are renderings that we're seeing these in.
Yeah.
Well, if you look at
the
Apple.com webpage. Yeah, the big graphic that they show on edge of the watch edition It's gold and it has a kind of a rusty brown band. And then the center of that crown is the exact same color as the band.
Yep.
Yeah. See, those are all renderings. I'm not convinced. I don't know. I wish you'd asked this question while I was there.
Yeah. Well, they, you know, that's one of those things that it could.
It's a subtle thing.
I bet it's something where you, when you buy your watch, it's part of the band that you choose. So if you choose, so if you're getting the edition and you get the red band, it just defaults to that. And while you can swap out the bands themselves, I would imagine there's really no way to swap out the
See,
the
but that's the kind of detail
I'm looking at the pictures.
Where Apple's going to come back, you know, and we'll find out the thing is somehow magically swappable. You know, I mean, whether it's a magnet kind of thing that holds it in and you have a counter magnet that just pops it out and you pop a different one in to match your bands. You know, that would be a nice little touch.
That would be a nice little touch. I could see that happening.
I'm looking at the pictures I took, and per model, the crown insets of the real watches are the same color.
Just matched to the metal, which would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's
maybe it's only an option on the edition ones. Maybe it's a special feature of the edition watches.
Yeah, that would
make
sense.
They do look like maybe they're
looking
different.
Looking at the photos they have on apple.com/watch, it looks like that's black on all the watches except on the Sport where there's no color at all. So it's just silver.
It's just silver. Oh, that's right. Okay. And that's what I'm seeing in the pictures that I took.
All right.
It may be an addition feature, like I said.
Yeah. So, so the big thing for me was, first of all, the interaction overall of having the home screen be a bunch of little bubbles, right? And so the two primary things are that home screen, the way they have that laid out, which looks pretty good. But I think the thing they made the biggest deal of is the zooming feature. The whole purpose of that digital crown is that you zoom in and out with that thing, and that's the primary purpose of it. And they said over and over, it's because you don't want to have to do the pinching gesture on something because you can't see it because that screen is just so small. Now, as soon as I said that, I'm thinking, well, how the heck, that's going to be a weird dance that you're going to have to do is you're going to have to center the thing and then scroll in a little bit and then center the thing and then zoom in a little bit more because you can't really do that much. You can't do directional. You're either going Z-wise or you're going X-Y by touching the screen. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you can create clusters of apps.
Right, but the app thing... That makes total sense. The home screen, so you have your little cluster, your little neighborhood thing, and you can zoom all the way out and you can tap on your neighborhood and it zooms in. And it, actually, if you want to see a perfect demo of, almost perfect demo of how that works, check out the Beats mobile app. Because when you go through that onboarding process, it's almost identical in terms of those little bubbles and how they move around and all that stuff.
Can we talk about how critical your icon design is going to have to be? You're going to be on the watch, since that whole bubble thing, as near as I can tell, there's no text.
Yeah.
No, that's right.
Right. Oh, so your app is going to have to be immediately identifiable as whatever it is just by a little round logo. Unless the only thing I thought of is maybe can you zoom all the way down to like a single app view? I thought, you know, they could have it so that once you're down to like a single app view in a neighborhood, then you just flick through the apps in those neighborhoods, let that neighborhood left to right, and maybe they can bring up some text under the icon at that point. But I mean, just as you're zooming around, I noted, you know, David Pogue pointed out, and I went, oh yeah, you're right. There's not a single word on there.
Yeah. So,
that could pose a problem if you have that many apps on there.
Yeah. Now, I think a good question to ask, Dave, is what are developers going to be able to do with the watch? So obviously they're going to be able to make some... Well, I'll let you tell it. So what can developers do with this watch?
I don't know that I know the answer to that.
Okay.
I have some notes on that.
Yeah, go ahead.
In the keynote. You know, let me see if I can find them. Yeah. I just pull them up here. I know that they can create glimpses.
Yep. Yeah, they can, add into the, the glances.
Notifications are built in at a default level by default. So if your app does notifications, you will get generic notification support.
And then you can dismiss it, and that's it.
Yeah. If you want to have interaction, then that's something that has to be implemented in the app.
And I think it's one
of
those.
There was one other aspect.
I don't know the limits of what those apps can do. Right. And I don't know that that was made clear, but you can definitely develop a native app for the watch.
You can definitely do that. Okay.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
That's good to know.
They demoed Twitter's app, I think.
They
gave them more functionality than just the notification over there. So,
You can scroll through a very tiny list of tweets, which is
fun. The areas that they highlighted, and I don't know if there's more than this, that WatchKit enables the developers to do actionable notifications. So that's the thing where you can actually take an action on the notification, adding an app to the home screen, and then glimpses. But then they specifically called out things like, you know, Starwood Hotels leveraging the NFC to do unlocking of room doors, and, you know, Honeywell application to control their new thermostat. Yep. By the way, I've seen that thing in Lowe's. It so wants to be a Nest and so isn't. it's just feels so cheap in comparison. Okay, so, and it's not cheaply priced.
I was afraid I was being overly critical, but hearing you say the same thing.
I have a Nest, and the Nest it's a beautiful thing. I mean, just the weight of it, the smoothness of the scrolling, the Honeywell thing is round and looks like a Nest, but you know, you turn it and the casing's plastic and very obviously plastic, and you know, it kind of goes click, 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 you know, you feel it turning. It's not, you know, like spinning on smooth ball bearings.
Yeah.
So
that's good to know. We don't have WatchKit, right? Developers are they able to use WatchKit? Are they able to play with it now at this point?
I don't think so.
No.
Okay, so that's not part of the current SDK. I would imagine if the thing's not finished, if the watch isn't finished, they're probably not going to put something out where developers can start building.
Sounds
apps.
Like they've partnered with some, again, they have some select people working on some beta apps or some alpha apps probably, and kind of figuring things out. Because they mentioned specifically, you know, Honeywell, Lutron Lights for HomeKit, and the Starwood thing, among some others. And obviously showed, you know, the Twitter app.
Yeah. So, Dave, ultimately, based on what you've seen, because you didn't really get to play with it that much, other than little taps that you got to, you know, poke in there real quick. Do you think that the overall interaction, the touch screen plus the pressure, because it seemed like the pressure touch, they called it a force tap to bring up contextual menus, plus
settings mostly, it looked like to me, like that was kind of the key way to get into your settings.
Plus the crown. You think those three things together, do you think that equals a great experience, a really good way to interact, maybe an innovative over all the other watches kind of way to interact with one of these types of devices?
Yeah, I think the crown is brilliant, right? Because it solves that problem that every device has, and it solves it with a classic watch paradigm. Right. So
an elegant one, because I'll point out Pebble has the classic 80s Casio watch paradigm, which is, you know, press the up button and the down button and the center button. Right. We've had that paradigm for a while, but that was never elegant or classy or.
It sucks. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But it works and you don't block the screen.
You know, and again, I mean, to go back to what we were saying before, you know, it's what we love about Apple. When they said in the keynote, you know, it doesn't work to take the iPhone interface and cram it into a watch. They said that because they tried it, right? You know, they tried it. They tried that and 50 other things and threw them all away until they finally found one that they were happy with. And so, yeah, I think the UI... I'm not worried about the UI of this.
Okay.
My concern with the watch is it Apple made a very bold choice to bake this functionality into a watch. And the reason I say that's a bold choice is it forces potential users to do one of two things. It either forces them to start wearing a wristwatch when they have previously not worn one at all. Right. Mm-hmm. Or to start wearing their watch instead of whatever wristwatch or watches they choose to they've previously chosen to have.
Now, or fitness band too.
Well, no,
point,
see
right?
that's the thing, because you can wear a wristwatch and a Fitbit, right? Or, or any kind of fitness band.
Right.
Whereas with the Apple Watch, you have to, I mean, unless you're really going to be a geek and put, you know, one on one wrist and one on the other, you're not going to, that's not going to be the classic use case. So, but, and it's also not cheap, right? You're not talking about asking somebody to give up their, you know, $50 watch and put on an Apple Watch, because I think the Apple Watch that most people are going to want is going to fall into that $400 to $500 range, right? When all is said and done, and you get the band that you want, and this, that, and the other thing. So, I'm not, you know, and so you're going after people that are willing to spend, you know, significant money, what I consider significant money, on a watch.
You mean like, and the people that spent $600 on the on an unsubsidized first iPhone?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah.
That would be,
you know,
yes.
So,
yeah.
So, you know, do you give up your, you know, $700 Tag Heuer watch to go wear an Apple Watch full time? It's not like you're adding a watch to your collection. My guess is, if you're going to commit to this thing and use it for its fitness tracking and all of that, you're going to want to use it all the time. And so now you're abandoning every watch you have, or you're wearing a watch in the case that you didn't have them before. And that, I think, is their biggest challenge. Mm-hmm. That I think is going to be the make or break. And you know, look, Apple's really good at marketing, so maybe they can pull that off, but that's their challenge right
now. Yeah. You know,
there's a lot of people like me though.
Yeah.
So I haven't worn a watch in years.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the Apple Watch and I'm thinking, okay, this is really cool. I'm really, really interested in the health and fitness aspects of it. And for between now and when it comes out, I will probably be thinking about this every single day. Am I willing to invest $500 to see if I'll even wear the watch?
Right. Yeah.
You know, it was interesting to me because I got the Fitbit to, or not Fitbit, the Pebble to try and figure out, you know, if that would be a thing or what Apple was going to do, you know, obviously knowing that Apple was going to do a lot more than what the Pebble had, but just, you know, that seemed to be a device that had some functionality, had some apps, it had some traction. And, you know, I wore that thing for a couple months, and what kind of got me to stop wearing it was having to charge it, believe it or not. Now, its charging mechanism is kind of a pain. You know, it's really proprietary. It doesn't, it's kind of MagSafe-y, but it doesn't click in very well. But, you know, in that had, I would get significantly 4 or 5 day battery life out of it. So, you know, battery is definitely going to be something that's going to be an issue for Apple. And all we're hearing now is it's probably going to be a nightly charger, sort of just like your phone. So now you've got two things at the end of the day, your phone and your watch, that you're going to have to remember to plug in. And, you know, if you forget, guess what? You know, it's like you were saying, Dave, you not only do you have to convince people to start wearing a watch who haven't been, you now have to convince them to charge it and have it ready to wear every day as well. So that's another hurdle.
And that means the watch can't track your sleep.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, and it sounds like an insignificant thing, but, you know, my experience in practice became, I kind of just stopped wearing it because it was a pain to have to try and find the charger cable. I only had one, plug it in, and, you know, that sort of thing. The other thing I will mention though is the killer app for me with the Pebble was the Starbucks app, where I could pay at Starbucks with the watch. So
that's pretty cool.
Maybe with Apple Pay in there.
Yeah. So that is one thing that the Apple Watch will do. It will extend the Apple Pay to the watch. You do have to authenticate on your phone. I believe you can do that with Touch ID. And the way that they will keep it authenticated is really cool. They have a skin contact there a way to sense that. So as long as it stays in contact with your wrist, it will remain authenticated. When you take it off, you have to re-authenticate when you put it back on, which is very cool.
Now, one thing I haven't had a chance to look up yet, and I don't know if there's an answer out there for this. If you have an iPhone 5 or 5S, you can buy an iWatch or Apple Watch and use it.
And a 5C.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because Apple Watch supports NFC. Does that mean you now get Apple Pay support on your iPhone 5 or 5S because you have an Apple Watch?
Hmm. Well,
you'd have to use the watch because the watch has the NFC part.
Well, yeah, right, yeah. Right. But you. So the question is Apple Pay on the iWatch an extension of Apple Pay on the iPhone 6 and 6 Plus, or is it its own self-contained Apple Pay?
I get the impression that it's its own self-contained Apple Pay within the watch, and it's using the phone again for communication out.
Yeah, interesting.
And if that's the case, then that greatly expands the potential user base for Apple Pay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Which would arguably be beneficial for Apple.
I see what
overall,
you're saying, though, Jeff.
They
didn't make that clear. Sorry.
Yeah, overall, I think that would be a net positive for Apple, allowing people to do that, even though you're not forcing them into an upgrade situation.
And that's right. I assumed when they said Apple Pay was on the iWatch, it meant any iWatch out there could do Apple Pay, that it wasn't, you know, just iWatches that were paired with a 6 or a 6 Plus.
Yeah. And then so as far as the fitness stuff goes, there are two sensors and two LEDs on the back, which basically just do pulse rate, which...
I expected a lot more sensor technology. Yeah.
So did I.
Than we wound up with.
I think so. There's an accelerometer in there, right? You have to have that.
Gyroscope. Barometer. Is there a barometer? Like in the phone? Do we know?
I haven't seen anything to say that.
Okay.
And I think the health data is an aggregate of what the phone and the watch put together, right?
Yep.
So
it's fairly, ultimately you're going to get some good data out of it. You're going to get the barometer data from your phone.
Right.
I was certainly hoping for some more sensors like blood glucose level, but I think that's still almost just experimental as far as doing it without drawing blood goes. Doing it through optical means. So I guess overall the question really is this thing, well, okay, I guess there are two questions in my mind. One, is it better or potentially better than Google's Android Wear?
Yes.
Or is it on par at the very least? What do you think, Dave?
I haven't messed around with the Android stuff much. I feel like the UI with this is better, but it's really hard to say. I mean, we're talking about...
Pre-release stuff.
We're talking about two unfinished products, aren't we?
Yeah.
Right? So, I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see. It's like talking about the original iPhone, right? You know, we got to experience a little more of it than we did the iPhone when it came out, but really we didn't know anything. And what we do know is that the iPhone changed somewhat dramatically between, you know, January and June when we finally got our hands on it. And so I've got to kind of, I'm reserving judgment on that. Like I said, the UI is the right, a right path. It's certainly not the wrong path, but they've got some interesting challenges to solve to gain acceptance, right?
Yeah,
so that's right. Where it's going to be interesting.
Do you think those challenges are different from Google's challenges, or are they the same?
Well, they're different in that it's Apple marketing it. And I think that makes a big difference.
Okay. I think that the one major difference between Apple and Google in this case is that Google is 100,000% cool with just taking all of your data and doing whatever they want with it. And then on the side, almost providing you a benefit for all that data collection. And then on the other side, Apple is very cautious about what sort of data they gather. However, it seems that for the most part, you're going to get almost all of the same benefits, minus a few things here and there. And I'm referring to the Google Now stuff versus what we get with the limited data collection that they do, because I mean, just by definition, with what Apple is trying to provide us as far as privacy, they just can't give us as much as Google is willing to give us.
Right.
So, but overall, I thought my first impression of the thing when I saw it was, big whoop, nothing revolutionary. But as I looked at more of the stuff that's there and just kind of thought about my life with that thing on my wrist, sure, I have my phone in my pocket all the time. I can do more, for the most part, with my phone than I could with this watch. However, it's one of those things where you have to take it out of your pocket. And it's not just a situation where I'm lazy and I don't want to take it out of my pocket. There are also a lot of other situations where it's difficult because you have, I mean, maybe you're carrying things or you just don't, maybe you're driving, yada, yada. There are a lot of reasons why this makes sense. And I can say that there have been countless times where I'm sitting there on the couch watching something and I want to pause my Apple TV, but I have to go hunting for the remote or my phone. And if this watch is on my wrist, I can just control it from there. So overall, I think, you know, we'll have to see. It's kind of like the iPhone. I tried to equate it to that situation where when I saw the iPhone, I thought I knew exactly then that this thing is a game changer. With the watch, I wasn't as sure. And I think it's going to be one of those things where, you know, I'll have to, everyone will have to think about, is this going to impact me? Is this going to be a useful thing in my life if I had it with me? And we're also going to have to wait and see what the finished product looks like, because it is not a finished product at this point. But it's pretty close.
That's true. The sport model doesn't even have a sapphire glass crystal. And knowing that the original iPhone went from a plastic display to Gorilla Glass before it actually shipped, I'm wondering if Apple will be changing that on the sport model before it ships so that it's sapphire across the board.
That's a good point. Dave, I know you had to get out of here around this time. Do you have a few more minutes, or do you have to?
Yeah, sure. I got a couple more minutes. Okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I think we're pretty much done with talking about the watch, right? Is there anything else that you guys, any last words about your thoughts, concerns about the watch? Going once, going twice. Okay. So I guess the one really neat bit of news, especially for me, because my iCloud service was about to lapse and I was going to be charged again. I think $40 or something, whatever I was paying per year. So they have, and they announced it already, I think during WWDC, that they were lowering the prices of iCloud down to so $1 a month for 20 gigs and $4 a month for 200 gigs, et cetera. And there are bigger prices. So it's much cheaper now. And those prices are available right now. So, and if you currently have a paid version of iCloud, they will switch you automatically, or at least they have for many people, to the cheaper options that may potentially get you more space. So if you go and check that out, I would recommend checking that out, because you're going to be saving some money, which is very cool. Apple has, they updated their website. So now finally, after 7 years, they now have a mobile version. 7 years since unveiling the original iPhone, where I think it was one of those things where they thought, you know, the iPhone can see the whole internet. That was a big thing that they pushed, that you can see whole pages on there and you can zoom. I think that they were sticking with that for a long time on Apple.com, and they've changed that now. So it's a little bit easier to look at Apple.com. I don't think they've changed everything, but there you go. And the last bit of information, I guess we're going to end on a slightly sad note, is that they've removed the iPod Classic. They're no longer selling it.
Yeah, that's a shame.
What was it up to? It like really 160 gigs, right? Is that what they...
160 is what it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I use mine all the time in the car.
That's kind of surprising. Well,
it just became a collector's item, Dave.
Yeah.
Yeah. It crashes a lot, though, you know.
That's so interesting.
Well, I think the drive is, like, flaky.
Oh,
I
mean, okay.
You know, it's It's a hard drive, and it's been subjected to probably the harshest elements, at least temperature sweeps, that I would expose any hard drive to ever, right?
Yeah,
it sits in the freezing cold and the baking sun, so.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So let's go around the table. I think I already said, well, I'm not super sure that I'm going to get an iWatch, but I'm pretty sure that I'm going to try to get an iWatch when it comes out. Is everybody else planning to get an iWatch or Apple Watch?
I will probably get the 349 edition, whatever that ends up being, which I'm hearing inklings. I read one report from one of the fashion bloggers, and I don't know where they got their information from, that the Sport is actually the lower priced one.
That would make sense.
The 349 one. Yeah, it's the one with the iron glass
band.
And iron glass instead of iron X glass rather than sapphire.
So. And the aluminum body instead of the stainless steel.
Yeah.
We can have this conversation offline, but sapphire, there is a huge benefit to having sapphire glass on a watch. I have, like I said, I'm a watch guy, and mm-hmm. I've got a lot of different watches, and the ones with sapphire glass are the ones that I wear because the ones without it get scratched.
Good point. It's going to come down to price point.
Yeah, of course.
And where those things fall. If we're talking a jump from 349 to 400, that may be swingable. But if it's, you know, another 100 for the next one and another 100, you know, couple hundred for, I'm sure the gold edition, the Apple edition ones are going to, you know, push into the low,
I think that's $1,000. Yeah,
thousands. Low thousands, you think? That's kind of what
I'm
feeling.
I think that's a $999 thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I could even see it.
But I also think the Sport model is going to sell for $299, not $349.
Yeah. So it kind of seemed like they quoted, as I remember, it seemed like Tim Cook said that the middle tier was going to be $349 or something.
No,
they said starting at $349.
Yeah, they said starting at.
Okay. But I think that's a hedge, and if they can make it work lower than that, you know, by $50, they will, and I think they will.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, you know, they didn't give a price quote on the original iPhone, did they? When they first talked about it. So, and I think this is probably going to be one of those 6 month waits. Probably about
close.
That much time.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, my translation always of late anything is the very last. You know, what is the latest?
When we're talking about Apple.
Latest of late 2015.
Early 2015. The latest of early 2015.
Or latest of early 2015. Yeah, sorry.
Which is probably going to be like April.
Yeah, I would say March or April is a good bet.
I would not be surprised. Yeah. Okay, so we're not going to do our picks because I think all of our picks are probably either the Apple Watch or the iPhone this week.
we just spent a bunch of money this morning.
Yeah, we don't need to spend any more money.
Yeah.
Of course, Audible is sponsoring our podcast this month. Check out your free book at audiblepodcast.com/TIOSS. Review the show in iTunes. Tell a friend. You can find the iPhone picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. You can email us feedback@theiosshow.com. And of course, advertising is handled by Backbeat Media at backbeatmedia.com. Dave Hamilton hosts the wonderful Mac Geek Gab podcast. It's a podcast that, although I am forced to listen to every week because I work on it, I very much enjoy listening to it. And I would continue listening to it if I wasn't working on it. So definitely check that out if you've never heard it. Because, you know, I like to get geeky, and that's what they do.
Thanks, man.
Yeah. Yeah. And thanks for being here. Thanks. I mean, because there were a lot of people who were relative to normal events. There were a lot of people, but it's still hard to come buy one of those tickets and get to see it. And I know you have a busy schedule, so I appreciate you coming by.
Yeah, it was fun. I'm glad I came.
Yeah. Jeff Gamet is at the Mac Observer, at Jay Gamet on Twitter, and TMO Daily Observations, that podcast. Check that out with Jeff. Thanks for being here.
Of course. And every week, it's always a blast.
Yes. And Adam Christensen's at the MacCast, MacCast.com, at MacCast on Twitter, and member.maccast.com is the member version of his show.
Thanks
for being here. And you can find me on Twitter. I'm at Michael Johnston. You can find me and everybody on this show is on Appler, GETAPPLR.com. Check out the apps that we like and don't like and interact around them, about them, and through them. Why not? So with that, we'll see you next time on the iOS show.
An internet. How are we going to communicate this? A stylus. We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right? We're going to use a stylus. No. Yuck. No. Who wants a stylus? You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Yuck. No. No. You have to get them and put them away and you lose them. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. Nobody wants a stylus. So let's not use a stylus. We're going to use the best pointing device in the world. We're going to use a pointing device that we're all born with. We're born with 10 of them. We're going to use our fingers. Fingers. Yuck. Their fingers. Yuck. Communicator. An iPod. A phone. Are you getting it? An iPod. A phone. An iPod. A phone. An internet communicator.